Welcome to the Swing Set. Climb on up. There is always a swing available. On Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, we explore ethically non-monogamous relationships, the pleasures and passions, the promise and pitfalls. We discuss all aspects of ethical non-monogamy in a fun, open, and welcoming fashion, with a gleam in our eye, a bounce in our step, our hands down your pants. Ooh, sorry, got ahead of myself. We may be biased. In fact, we most certainly are. But we don't sugarcoat, and each of us speaks honestly and earnestly about our thoughts, ideas, and experiences throughout our very own lives on the Swing Set. Thanks for swinging by.
Hey there, Swing Set fans. In the podcasting world, ranking high on iTunes can mean the difference between some listeners and lots of listeners. So do us a favor and hop onto iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and submit a 1-2 sentence review telling us what you think. If you listen to us on mobile devices, you can also find us on Stitcher. Download their mobile app and look up Life on the Swing Set and listen to any of our episodes on demand at your fingertips. You can also help us out if you live around the world and have unique local issues to air that we may not have touched on. We want to hear about them. Head over to www.lifeontheswingset.com/forum and post about it. You can also leave us a voicemail at 573-55-SWING and we may address you on the air. Thanks for listening.
Okay, welcome to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. We are back for another part in our discussion on the non-monogamy umbrella and swinging open and poly, the SOP community. So tonight we're going to talk about how we can help bridge the community and help make everybody realize that we are all very much the same and all have the same wants, which is freedom to pursue non-destructive sexual interests. I'm Cooper Beckett, and with me tonight, we have...
Hey everybody, it's Ginger.
Hey, this is Dylan.
Yeah, hey, this is Pepper.
And we are going to get right back into that, but first I have a little business, and it's mostly to irk Dylan. But he started a little fight with me the other night.
I did?
You did. About the word queer.
Oh,
I love the word queer.
Well, here was the fight. And it's important for what we're talking about, because a lot of what we're talking about comes down to how we label ourselves and how our labels speak to ourselves. And the idea was that there should be heterosexual and queer. And queer encompasses the rest, basically. And my argument was very similar to Dan Savage's argument, who was addressed with the exact same issue the other day, was that the moment you take away the subsections of that word, if queer means BDSM-oriented, if queer means bisexual, if queer means asexual, then you don't have any way to let the people you're looking for know what you are until you say, I'm queer, bisexual leaning. At what point do you need the I'm queer thing? And that was my argument.
Well, I didn't want to. I don't like the idea. Well, okay. I think what happened was I asked, what's with everybody calling themselves queer? Because I had been seeing a lot of it lately and I didn't understand how that really fit in with the spectrum of, well, how do we identify ourselves? And I've been seeing a lot of specifically bi girls identifying as queer. I don't know if a lot of bi guys do, because I'm not generally looking for bi guys, although one of these days, but you know, that's where I was noticing.
You are a bi hag, you know that?
Yeah, I could totally be a bi hag.
You totally love being around bi people, and you totally wish you were bi, but you're not. And you know, it's sad that you can't be what you want to be, which is bisexual. I feel bad for you.
I know, but I didn't get what was defining someone as queer. And so that's when I brought this up to you. And I guess if people are doing it to kind of unite the clans and put everybody together in one united community, as opposed to using the LGBTQA and whatever else might happen to be part of the acronym these days, I get it. And I don't necessarily get why it's put together that way, though. So...
I think I can help with that, actually. I mean, the people I've known who identified as queer, as opposed to like lesbian or bisexual or something like that, it's because things were messy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, well, woman who only dates women seriously but will have sex with men on the side. Like, what do you call that?
Right.
Oh, and who is, right. you know, highly gender variant.
Right.
Right. So for some people, I think it's really a lot easier to say, oh, you know, I'm queer, and just have that, like, cover a whole bunch of stuff because none of the labels really fit really well.
Right.
But on the other hand, I think I totally agree with Cooper. You know, we sort of need those labels within sort of the gender and sexuality spectrum. And I really think of queer as like a gender and sexuality thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think for non-monogamous communities and maybe for the BDSM community, it's like we need a different word. And nobody knows what that word is yet.
Right.
But, you know,
because
tricky or whatever it is.
Well, and as much as I like the idea of having open as an umbrella term, at some point you are going to have to come to the, let me explain what open means to me.
Right.
You know, the nice thing about swinger or polyamory is it has a connotation. And, you know, I hear all these people who are just are so down on the word swinger. It's like, but if you go to a club and you're looking for sex, isn't it so easy to just say I'm a swinger and have it understood that means I'm probably looking for sex?
Right. And it tells people, like, not only that you're looking for sex, but that you're looking for sex, you know, perhaps as a couple, perhaps as a male-female mm-hmm. couple, probably looking for other male-female couples, right? It says a lot.
Yeah. And so it makes our lives easier to have the labels, as much as in some instances they may stigmatize us.
You know, I've actually gotten more comfortable with the swinger label.
Yeah, I know you never really liked it at the beginning.
Yeah, in the very beginning I said, I don't like this because of the stigma associated with it. And so I've always identified that way, but kind of wanted to always explain what it was about and what we did after that. And I find that maybe in the last month, in my post-Burning Man world, I've actually become comfortable identifying as a swinger, and then being comfortable with actually saying, yes, I'm a swinger, and then going on and explaining anything else I need to or answering questions. I mentioned that I've been doing a lot of defending of the swinger community in general lately, and I don't know why I've become more comfortable with it, but I think I am, just because I need to. Now that I'm starting to do what Ginger was doing last time, straddle the lines a little bit. I hope that's making you hot again. I don't know. But now that I'm doing it, I think it's
she liked
it's nice
it when I was talking about the hump, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think it was the
it's
hump.
It's nice to be able to point to that and say, yes, we do like this. We're never giving this up. And we're swingers. And then go that route. So I've actually become more comfortable with it.
And interestingly, I mean, the three of us that are swingers and identify as swingers on this show are probably the closest to the boundary between swinging and poly of most swingers I know. You know, we all skirt that line so closely. You know, each of us have had or are having intimate relationships with other people. And it's interesting when I look at it that way, because it is so contrary to what the term swinger stands for in the rest of the world. You know, they don't expect us to want to spend large amounts of time. They don't expect a swing couple to go to the graduation of another swing couple's child. They don't see that, and I understand why they don't, but for me, that's one of the best things about the swinging lifestyle, is I'm a firm believer, and once you have sex with someone, it really opens most lines of communication, unless it makes it weird, in which case, no, it doesn't. But if you have sex with someone and you're still close with them, then really almost everything is on the table, because you've shared the intimacy of being really as physically close as you can be with someone, and it allows for so much greater communication. And that's really what it's all about for me, is being able to transcend standard, generic, boring, vanilla friendship because I love what happens. And this is one of the reasons I enjoy fucking my friends and fucking my friends who maybe aren't even necessarily swingers, because it allows me to transcend that, friendship and relationship we had in the past and create something new, which is even more fascinating to me. So it's, I feel like we're pushing this new direction that a lot of swingers are doing, and a lot of the swingers we know lean in this direction. And maybe it's our community specifically, because we do know people who are looking for swingers like this and aren't finding them. But I think in general, the swing community is looking for more than just sex now. And I think the poly community is looking for sex now too.
More sex.
More sex, yeah.
less talking, more sex.
a little less conversation, a little more action, as the man says, right?
Oh, well, you know, you're such a slut.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, this interesting thing has been happening in San Francisco, right? Where, like, you know, we hold numerous, like, poly dinners. San Francisco is sort of the epicenter. There's a high density here.
Uh-huh.
We hold, like, numerous poly dinners. We have some discussion groups, you know. We have these things, and you get, you know, you hold a little dinner thing. You get, like, 20 people or something like that. And that's great. But there are all these poly people in the area who they've met their social group. They know a bunch of poly people. They've worked through their jealousy issues. They don't need to go to discussion groups, right? And so all this talking just isn't really doing it for them anymore. And what I've discovered organizing in the area over the last couple of years is that, you know, if I want a lot of people to show up to something, I make it a dating event or a party.
Interesting.
Not necessarily a sex party, any sort of party, but folks want to socialize, they want to meet other people, they want to see what's out there.
Right. Because
there's a lot of these sort of like isolated little social silos. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where, like, oh, well, you know, we've got our 20 friends, but, like, you know, you can get another set of 20 people over here and none of them know each other. And so people really want to sort of transcend all that and get out there. But, yeah, they're, you know, it's not universal, but there's certainly a lot of poly people who want to party.
Well, and that's awesome, because that is such a common ground thing that both communities, we, you know, whether or not there's going to be sex involved, swingers love a party.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I think that, if we can, you know, I talk about it as though I'm unifying the clans indeed. If we can just get both of these sides to party together, I think, and drop a little bit of the, oh, you know, if I party and flirt with this person, they're going to be disappointed if I don't fuck them. I think that is the biggest barrier. And Shira, I was disappointed that she couldn't rejoin us for this episode, because I wanted to address something that she and I have talked about, which is the expectations of what they might want from me. You know, when you first meet someone, if you have all these expectations and are worried you're not going to fulfill what that person's looking for, then you become guarded and you become, well, less interesting, I think.
Well, and did I cut you off, Coop?
Go,
sorry.
Go ahead, darling.
It's just, it's interesting to think about it from the perspective of me being in, you know, headed to a swinger party and knowing it's a swinger party and having that same mindset in the sense that, putting myself there and realizing, you know, I'm going to have that same experience of, you know, I might click with some people in certain ways, click with others in other ways, and only a select few might I have an erotic connection with that I want to act on.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever label they're choosing, whether it's swing or poly or open or, you know, any of the above, and same with, you know, I mean, any label, it's still the same thing. I mean, it's still another human being that you may or may not have an erotic connection with. And so in that way, the labels really can get in the way,
right,
in the sense that if you're going to a swing event and you have this assumption that everybody's going to be all up on you, like ready to rock, it's like, well, maybe or maybe not. Or going to a poly event and thinking, well, you know, this will be tame and calm and relaxed, and we're going to have some great conversation.
And maybe a few dates from now, we'll move in together, right?
Exactly. And a few dates from now, I'll get my U-Haul, and I'll get all my stuff, and I'll move in with Pepper. It's one of those things.
She's going to be on your doorstep, Pepper, and I strongly recommend you let her in because she is fascinating.
Well, you know, we've got a downstairs apartment.
Hey, there you go.
We can put her in there. There's some shackles. A little
Pepper,
cage.
An interesting anecdote, by the way. At our camp...
Now I'm getting all fluttery.
at our camp, there were actually a couple of swinger couples that came and checked it out. And they were all having a good time. And, you know, they were all tits out after like 5 minutes or something. But they mentioned to me that they left pretty quickly because they were actually hoping to find people to play with there. And they found that everybody just wanted to touch their tits and feel them up, but not necessarily go and have sex. And so there was kind of an initial incompatibility and expectations there that I didn't expect to see. I didn't even know it was there until it kind of happened.
Which is so interesting to me because here I stand, you know, willing to claim the label swinger. And to me, that is playing. To me, being in your sexy place and having someone, you know, maybe touch you, feel you up, maybe kiss you a little bit, like that might be the perfect interaction with those people, swinger, poly, whatever. And so it's interesting that, you know, they're swingers and it's that concept of, well, they're looking for someone to have sex with. And it's funny because, again, very willing to claim that label of swinger. That's not how I roll. That's not how Prof and I function. And kind of what I was getting at in the last episode around having had people that we were dating very gently and sweetly, but kind of call us on, well, you guys are kind of slow moving, aren't you? And it's like, well, yeah, that's right. And just like putting it out there, not feeling judged or feeling defensive, but, and you know, that's not how we always function, but sometimes it is. And so it's just interesting that that label can sometimes indicate how you play, but sometimes it's completely inaccurate.
Right.
Or incomplete, maybe. So interesting. Well,
and, you know, for Burning Man, you know, next year maybe we'll hold a play party. If we hold a play party, then walking into the play party, yeah, I know, huh? And then walking into the play party will definitely be a different atmosphere.
Although I will admit, I have to skip next year at Burning Man, so my next year is going to be 2013. And I know I really, really...
Well, we won't do it next year then.
No, you don't let me stop you. I mean, if you guys want to play, then you know, all purposes.
Yeah, because as far as I've heard, you know, poly people like sex just as much as swingers, which is interesting.
You know, really, like, is that interesting?
It's almost like they're just like us.
Well, I mean, there are differences, but I think those differences are good too. And
absolutely.
In some ways, I feel like moving forward, what people really should do is try to learn from each other. Like, you know, if you want to know how to throw a good party, or you want to know how to have good group sex,
right?
Go to the swingers, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Let me tell you, a lot of poly people don't have group sex at all.
Which, like, is a shame. No, everybody,
is that
everybody
a choice,
should
or just
enjoy
because
having
they haven't
group
been in
sex.
That situation?
Sometimes it's you know, lack of preference, like they just don't want to do it. But other times it's just, strangely, there aren't a lot of opportunities, right? You go on dates with people, but you're only going on a date with each person, right? And setting up a threesome is like its own thing.
You know,
swingers are better at that shit. And there's stuff on the poly side as well. I think one of the more obvious ones for me is there's a lot of connections between the poly and the queer communities. And there's a lot of sort of queer poly people out there. And swinging sort of has this history of being a lot about male-female couples.
Right.
But, you know, I know a swinger club in San Francisco that's trying to, like, open that up. And, you know, have queer people there and have, you know, trans people in their couples and stuff like that. And, you know, poly people are good at that.
Right.
Like, good at... Not necessarily. Plenty of homophobic poly people, right? But
well, I wanted to ask.
But you know,
about
the community
that,
in general is pretty good about you know, connecting with queer folks, or being queer folks in many cases.
That's actually a comment I got specifically from someone that I've been speaking with recently, along with the whole, you know, hey, swingers do this and we don't do that thing. They mentioned that they've been interested in going to swinger clubs, but you know, the husband of the couple's bi, and they know there's not a lot of bi acceptance in the swinger community. I know we've lamented about that in the past and been trying very hard to move that that aspect of swinging forward, you know, the acceptance of bi guys in the swinger community. And yeah, if we can find that, I think that's awesome that the poly community has found is at least finding its way toward opening up to the queer community.
Well, I mean, in many ways, like, there's sort of whole separate poly queer communities, if that makes sense. And then there's a lot of bi acceptance sort of anywhere you go in polyamory. Mm. There's a lot of bi men, actually. We got your bi men right here.
No, you needed to say that with a New York Italian accent.
Right.
It didn't work with that. your generic San Francisco accent. We got your bi men right here. You know, that's how that needed to be said. No, but I've learned this and I think this is very similar to the generalization that swingers have an issue with poly and the poly have an issue with swingers. Is there are lots of bi male swingers.
Yeah.
But we, as bi male swingers, assume the community doesn't want us, so we don't speak up. But if all the bi male swingers spoke up, I think it'd be rather clear that the community can't diss us because we're a nice chunk of the community.
Is it assumed that gay men are pretty much automatically swingers?
I think a lot of people make that assumption.
Well, no, actually, it goes a little differently, I would say. I mean, it's sort of like, because swinging, again, has been historically based on male-female couples, I think gay men, in many ways, sort of can't be swingers or don't see themselves that way. I know the guys, but here's the interesting thing. It seems that most gay men I meet, even the non-monogamous ones, are not really interested in polyamory. They're not interested in having multiple full-on relationships, though some of them are. Like, I know this wonderful leather triad. But, you know, the majority of the guys who are out there doing non-monogamy, they're more interested in sort of like an open relationship model. And they sort of can't go to swinging because that's very much around male-female couples, and that's not their thing. And a lot of guys want, like, sort of all-guy parties, and you don't find that, right? And so yeah, there's a lot of this sort of like open relationship sex on the side, or like sort of occasional, you know, you go out on Thursdays to the bathhouses and I'm not going to ask you what you did when you get home, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's a lot of, so there's this sort of whole other, like in many ways in the heterosexual community, polyamory has eclipsed open relationships. Like people who would have been open a number of years ago are now either poly or swinger perhaps. But in the gay community, open relationships are still going strong. They're a very solid tradition.
Interesting.
So there's sort of like a whole other group there to learn from and to, you know, sort of be tolerant towards and all that.
So I guess the question, I mean, the real, you know, you do a lot of activism, Pepper, and you do a lot of organization in your community. That makes me wonder. So I know you do poly speed dating and you do what is the triangle thing you do?
Love Triangle.
Love Triangle.
It's a dance club. Yeah.
Do you reach out to the swing community at all for those?
You know, I've been trying to get on Cassidy and some other sites and I just have been mostly failing.
Okay.
But we totally get swingers at Love Triangle.
Okay.
For example. And I think actually the thing to keep in mind, a lot of what I try to do is instead of holding poly events, I'll try to hold like a non-monogamy event.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, despite the name poly speed dating, we actually get swingers show up because we let people date as a couple, which is kind of neat. Mm. But like Love Triangle from the very beginning, we were like, okay, this is a non-monogamy event. And, you know, sure, we were advertising on the poly list, but we were also going to Craigslist.
Right.
And, you know, couples who were showing up on Craigslist, we'd be like, hey, come to our party. And so we've gotten a decent mix in there, though still mostly poly because I'm bringing in a lot of poly people. But for instance, this very morning, I talked to a classroom of about 500 people about non-monogamy.
Nice.
Because I was invited in by the professor, myself and actually my partner Jen and her other partner. We talked to them.
Very cool.
And so what we did is, you know, we didn't make it a poly presentation. We made it a non-monogamy presentation. You know, there was a slide that's like swinging. Oh, this is how swinging generally works. And a lot of the stuff we're going to say about, you know, jealousy and figuring your shit out and stuff later on, that's also going to apply to swinging.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is everyone should be doing that, you know, sort of like just putting the word out there that there's sort of this constellation of open relationships or non-monogamy going on.
And that's why we're really trying to push the SOP acronym to give ourselves a classy acronym like LGBT. And it's
right.
For swinger, open, poly. And the open is in the middle because it sort of sits over all of us because we are all sexually, relationshiply.
That's a great word.
we are totally relationshiply open. And that's
right.
And I think you're right. And that's why about a year ago we decided to become more about all of it on the swing set is because we were seeing that our focus was limited, and a lot of what we talked about, as you said, the jealousy thing is so important to every aspect of open relationships because it introduces something that you just don't see about in mainstream media. So we've been programmed that this is what causes jealousy and here's how you deal with it. And, you know, here's how we wrap it up in a half hour or less. But we don't actually know how to process these other forms of jealousy that we maybe never expected to see. Like my wife, Marilyn, gets these little twinges of jealousy because I have lots of conversations with people all over the world now because of this website. And you don't necessarily know how to process that kind of jealousy or how to even have a conversation about it because you may not understand what's making you feel that type of jealousy. And so when you deal with these ideas, I think it's absolutely important to be able to deal with them across the spectrum. And it would help in vanilla life if you could learn to control and understand why you're feeling jealous. Because I've found most of the time jealousy stems from boo-hoo, poor me. And when you come right down to it, nobody wants to be boo-hoo, poor me. So if you look at it that way and you can understand that, okay, well, this is what's causing me to feel this way. Is this essential for me to feel this? And I'm a firm believer that jealousy can be squashed, if not permanently, at least tremendously.
Well, and swingers actually have jealousy techniques that poly people don't know about. A lot of swingers eroticize jealousy.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, I'm feeling jealous, but oh, it's kind of hot. And oh, you know, I'm feeling jealous, but you know, but wow, let's sort of like turn that into sexuality.
Right.
And because poly people aren't in group situations as much, we don't know that one. And so, you know, I was making a list of like ways to deal with jealousy and I was like, oh, right. And there's this one that nobody's thinking about, right? You know, where it's like, you know, try to make it hot.
Well, that's how Christopher Ryan was talking about how that you know, you blow your best sperm load when you think your wife's been fucked by someone else because of he put it more elegantly than that, but evolutionarily, because you want your sperm to go fucking farther than that last guy. And so, you know, often the best sex is after you feel that twinge of jealousy. And that's true of both sides of the community, I would imagine. You know, if my wife goes out on a romantic date and she comes home and then I get to sort of reclaim her in a very historical fashion.
Oh, you make me almost want to, like, try to see if I can go there because it sounds like the jealous sex is really spectacular. I just don't think I'm built that
Ginger,
way.
Ginger, as awesome as we might make jealousy sound. I think you should be very happy with your I don't feel jealousy stance.
No, no, I'm grateful, although sometimes it does make me feel a little bit like I've shared. I understand it, and I have empathy and compassion for friends who are experiencing it, but and I know it exists. I really it's just fascinating to me. I'm going to parlay this into a very odd question, or just observation, is that relating to the swinger open poly or just ethically non-monogamous, you know, big tent theory, that it is something, jealousy is something that does connect us all, in the sense that the mainstream culture uses jealousy as an indicator that what we're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
So,
and that if you don't feel jealous, there's obviously something wrong with you, and you probably don't really love your spouse.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're not jealous, you don't love the person, of course. Yeah.
That goes without saying. You
know. Right. Right. Which, you know, maybe it's just I've internalized that so much that that's why I feel isolated. But maybe I should just say, you know, fuck that. And I'm not going to feel that anymore. So there it is. But it is interesting that whether you are a swinger or whether you are poly or open in any way, that if you or your partner are feeling jealousy, that it's not something that you should be working through. It's something that is an indicator of the way you are conducting yourselves in your relationship is wrong, and you need to cease and desist and just look to each other, because of course you wouldn't be jealous if you were just monogamous, which is so fascinating to me, because of all of the people that I hear speak about jealousy in the most destructive ways, it's some monogamous acquaintances that turn it into crazy other things. The jealousy is jealous of the coffee shop person, or jealous of the bank teller that her husband goes to see, or, you know, it's kind of crazy that, I don't know. I'll stop. I'm on a rant now, but it's just...
Well, because jealousy begets jealousy.
Exactly.
And it That's only so true. Builds more and more. The more you allow jealousy to run rampant in your life, the larger and more irrational it becomes. And which is why it is so important to recognize the inherent foolishness in jealousy. I'm not saying there's never a reason to be upset about something your spouse did. Because there are plenty of things that you can do that maybe aren't kosher or cool or within the boundaries of your open relationship. The key is not going to jealousy, but is to understanding what the actual inherent problem is and figuring out if this is something you can deal with within the boundaries of your relationship, which only you can set.
Right. Pepper, I'm curious to hear your perspective on jealousy as a strategy or tool that mainstream culture uses to tell us that our relationship constructs are wrong, and just hear your perspective on that.
Well, first I want to say that I'm actually in your boat, since you're feeling isolated.
I don't really
paddle. I don't really get jealous. It's probably due to my upbringing. I didn't see a lot of jealousy in my family when I was growing up. And so, I've had to, you know, in a way I'm an alien, like even among poly people, right? I've had to like learn, oh, right, this sort of thing tends to upset people, mm-hmm. you know, or right, don't share the bathrobe, stuff like that. It's definitely, but you know, I think actually like maybe 1 in 20 people are in this situation. Like jealousy just doesn't take for some people. Mm-hmm. Like it's learned, mm-hmm. and some people don't learn it because people are just random to some extent, I think.
Well, and I was a jealous person for a long time. And it took a lot of the realization of that it was just juvenile, but nobody's paying attention to me. Mm-hmm. That I had. I mean, once I started realizing that, it just seemed sillier and sillier to act jealous.
I think jealousy has this sort of. To interrupt, I think jealousy has this sort of symbiotic relationship with monogamy. Mm-hmm. If you think about it. you know, which we may have trouble with because we are not monogamous people. But if you think about it,
I'm going to put like myself in a monogamous mindset.
Yes, well, let's do this. you know, jealousy makes a certain amount of sense. And it's certainly built up that way, right? Like, mm-hmm. so if you're monogamous and your partner is flirting with someone else, that's kind of a threat because they can be with the other person or with you, but they can't do both.
Right.
Right. And so
and you only have one of them.
Right. Jealousy makes, you know, monogamy creates jealousy in a way. Like, jealousy makes sense in monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's a very conditioned reaction. Like, it gets very deep within people. And, you know, it's in all the movies. And if you listen to songs, it's all like, I'll take your man, or like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, don't be a cheater. Like, all this jealousy stuff.
Oh, yeah, that woman who trashed the car, because maybe he'll think twice before he cheats.
Exactly,
that's right.
Perfectly, yeah, you know, hilariously decision. Enough, my poly partner Jen loves that song. Anyways. But
because criminal activity is always fun.
Criminal activity is sexy. but so jealousy, once it's conditioned in us, then it has this weird effect that it tends to make us monogamous.
Right.
Right? Because, oh, you know, if my partner, I hear this so much and I see it in so much media about polyamory, right? Well, that's not possible. You get too jealous. Like, I don't think I could ever do that. I'd get too jealous, right? It's all this like, oh, well, jealousy will be this like overwhelming thing that will destroy me and my relationship and my life and cause me to like shoot people.
Well, I think jealousy begets an ownership thing too, because if you're jealous of your partner paying somebody else attention, it's like you, just by the quality of you being with them, you own all their attention,
mm-hmm.
And vice versa. And I'm glad I don't feel that way anymore. I had a very long, sordid history with jealousy that I'm very happy to be over. Just, if no other reason, just because I don't feel like I own Tonya's attention or she doesn't own my attention.
So Life on the Swing Set has to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some more from questions from our listeners about poly and swinging issues and coming together.
And we're going to have Pepper look into the future.
Yes, Pepper, you will see into the future.
With my crystal balls.
With your crystal.
Oh man, did I just pitch a softball or what?
And we will be right back.
Hey, Cooper, guess what?
What's that, Shira?
I just found the most amazingly sex-positive, eco-friendly, progressive, female-run sex shop.
Oh, really? This place sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Shira B. Cat stamp of approval?
They have the cutest name. They're called Smitten Kitten. Their brick-and-mortar store is located in Minneapolis, and their online shop is located at www.smittenkittenonline.com. They specialize in high-quality sex toys and equipment for people of all genders and sexual orientations. Handmade, one-of-a-kind items, non-toxic, medical-grade toys, educational books and DVDs, and even ethically produced porn on demand.
Oh, Shira.
What?
Get with the times! Everybody knows about SmittenKittenOnline.com. In fact, Life on the Swing Set has partnered with Smitten Kitten to give all of our listeners a 10% discount when they buy items from their online store. All our listeners have to do is enter the code SWINGSET at checkout, and boom! Discount.
No way. I can use it too? They have the super hot harness I got my eye on.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to smittenkittenonline.com and use the product code SWINGSET. Not only will you get 10% off your purchase, but you'll also be supporting one of the most progressive and sex-positive businesses in the industry.
All right, Cooper, I'm on it. www.smittenkittenonline.com. Discount code SWINGSET.
You'll be glad you came.
When it comes to online dating, you at home have a lot of options available to you. But we here at Life on the Swing Set recommend Cassidy.com. We've tried many websites in the past, and while most are adequate and some are even pretty good, the one that we keep coming back to is Cassidy.com. And there are a few reasons for that. First of all, and most important to me, is ease of use. You want to put a picture on your page? You know how to do it. It's intuitive. It's built in. It's Facebook for non-monogamy. Cassidy also has one of the most aggressive campaigns out there to get the most people all around the world onto the site. Right now, potential Playmates are scattered throughout regional websites. Wouldn't it be awesome if they were all in one place so you could search one site and find absolutely everyone you were interested in playing with? Well, that's where the campaign for Cassidy comes in. Cassidy need not be your only site, but we recommend you give it a try. And if you sign up using the link on our page, you support Life on the Swing Set, so we can continue bringing you what's been called the best non-monogamy podcast out there. And if that's not incentive enough, if you join Cassidy, you get to see my wife's tits. How can you argue with that? Cassidy.com. Hey listeners, have you listened to Pedestrian Polyamory and Swinging with the Becketts, the two Life on the Swing Set spin-off podcasts? Well, if you haven't, Pedestrian Polyamory is a look at polyamory from a level-headed point of view, hosted by our own Shira B. Katz and her husband Gavin Katz. And Swinging with the Becketts features Marilyn and myself interviewing a new swinging couple every month to discuss their time in the lifestyle and any advice they would give to newbies. So check them out, the two new Swing Set podcasts at lifeontheswingset.com. Welcome back to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. We are talking about polyamory and swinging and open relationships and how we're really a lot more alike than different, and how a lot of the silly community squabbling and infighting may even not be as hyped as most people in the communities think it is. I did get a great comment from Dan of Ask Dan and Jennifer that when asked why swingers and polys are always fighting instead of loving, which was my question, he pointed out that the SOP community, the swingers, open, and poly, we're just a microcosm of the much larger world community. So the cross section will be full of people who are really awesome people, who are jerks, who are all about the infighting, who hate the infighting. You know, we get absolutely every, and I think this is true of both swinging and poly, is we get every bit of the spectrum. There is no consistency to who is a swinger and who isn't. You get Republicans and Democrats. You get old people and young people. You get Catholics and atheists. It's really amazing because a lot of the preconceived notions you might have in the swinging community is often proved incorrect within 10 minutes of a visit to a swing club. Is that true of polyamory, would you say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the whole problem with these sort of like mainstream stereotypes. We all hear them, right? And poly people aren't going to swinger clubs, so they don't know.
Exactly.
But so they expect to walk in and have it just be like some kind of crazy orgy on the floor. And much as that sounds charming, that's not actually what's happening.
Well, they expect it to be Plato's Retreat, don't they?
Right. Oh, yeah. Much as that would be charming, that's not happening. Yes. Well, and I think you're right.
And we expect a love-in from the 60s. I mean, I saw that movie, Bob Carroll, right, and Ted, like, and Alice, and the polyamorous love-ins that were going on there.
Whoa. I have not heard
crazy,
of that.
The crazy... I think people expect some like kind of crazy love cult or something like that.
Yeah. You expect people up in the mountains, let's say.
Group marriages.
Exactly.
Beating on drums.
Maybe wearing robes.
Yeah.
Of some sort. Yeah. But so we have these preconceptions completely that are only based in the stereotypes that media has shown us.
Which are awful.
Absolutely. And I think it's very true, though, that you're going to get every single thing we believe about the other side is true in a small bit. There is everything that the polyamorous community has ever leveled against the swing community is true in a subsection of the swing community. I think the same is true. Everything the swing community has leveled against polyamory is true in a subsection of the polyamory community. But in general, we're basically doing the same kind of thing and really just trying to survive in a bizarrely increasingly vanilla world when we feel like we're half the country is moving towards being far, far, far more open than we've ever been before. And the other half is not only dragging their feet, but are working their damnedest to go backwards,
mm-hmm.
which is terrifying. And why we as an open community need to really stand together, or I keep going to, or die alone. I don't know that it's that drastic, but it is almost. We need to present a unified front that not only are we open and fucking other people and loving other people and abandoning traditional concepts of fidelity and relationships, but we're also, you know, the chief of police, we're the lawyer you just hired, we're your dentist, we're your photographer, we're all these things that you know and would never assume. And I guess that's the word we gotta spread.
Well, I want to go back to something actually the Facebook poster said, which is the point of it just being a small number of people in each community that's probably saying relatively nasty things about the other community.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely true on the poly side. You know, I'm in a number of large poly forums, and in any one of them, you know, if swingers get hated on, it does not go. Everyone's like, so why do you have a problem with swingers? Oh, wait, why do you have a problem with sluts?
Right.
Some of the people here are sluts. Why do you have a problem with us? You know, there's this whole like, yeah, we've got it mm-hmm. down to a science. And what we find is it's really the new people coming in particular, who are often very insecure about their newly non-monogamous position, very insecure about newly being an outcast, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And who then often are like, oh, well, we don't do this, and we're not dirty sluts, and we're not swingers, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I think things were a lot worse maybe like 10 years ago.
Right.
Certainly, I was on some poly lists, and I got in some terrible flame wars because I was standing up for swingers, actually, back then.
We appreciate your support.
Yay, yeah, thank
well,
you.
You know, my parents knew swingers. Shit like that, right? It's not worthy. And so, but, you know, things have changed in the last 10 years, but still there's this sort of constant flow of new people who, you know, the first place they're going to go is, okay, well, I'm doing this thing and I'm trying to come to terms with the fact that I'm doing this thing. The way I'm going to do that is say, I'm not going to like those other freaks.
Right.
Yeah. Anyways.
No, I agree.
Just wanted to say that. Looking forward, I feel like, you know, it's not necessarily that communities will die, but actually there's a certain amount of danger, right? Like, cultures go through cycles of becoming more and less conservative. And I don't know, how was the 80s for swingers?
Well, the 80s was bad for swingers because of AIDS. So I think they all went into hiding. Really, really, there was no way to be pro-sex in the decade where sex would kill you.
Yeah, and it was really, you know, there was a lot of negativity. It was really hyped up.
Absolutely.
You know, the right wing was getting rolling. Like, all kinds of bad shit was happening. And let me tell you, open relationships and the poly precursors, sort of the poly fidelity folks, they were having a terrible time too.
Mm-hmm.
So it could absolutely, like, you get the right kind of cultural situation and, you know, clubs are being raided. I mean, clubs are already being raided. But
as we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
But all, you know, you can get witch hunts, right? Yeah. We've seen these things happen.
Well, what I think is the thing that's really for us, and this goes for any aspect of rebellion against Hunter Thompson's forces of old and evil. You know, you see these revolutions happening all around the world, and it's because we have connectiveness that we've never had before. You know, it's really hard to demonize something that's right in front of you that you can see communicating in front of you. So that's why, you know, oddly, I think Facebook could save the world, because it's putting us together with like-minded people. And when so many like-minded people get together and build something, it's really hard to knock down. And in the past, especially pre-bulletin board systems, you know, when we have swing friends who talk about when they first got started, they had to put an ad in a magazine, send a letter to a P.O. box. So basically, the thing I can do to five people in one night on Cassidy, they had to wait a month and a half to hear no response from. Yeah. So they had it so hard because they were isolated. You know, these little pockets of swing communities were built around a club that would get raided, most likely. But they were isolated because who knew if beyond the borders of this state, the same things were going on. But the thing the internet is showing us is these things are going on everywhere.
Well, it also makes it hard to ignore. I mean, it's easy to deny that homosexuality exists in Iran when it's not talked about or shown anywhere. Mm-hmm. But once you start adding the internet into that equation, all of a sudden it's there and it gets normalized even if the government doesn't necessarily acknowledge it.
And so, yeah, so the normalization is what matters, is when they see that this is, you know, my dentist is a swinger and I like my dentist. So therefore, how could they be that bad? You know? And I think we have such a wonderful opportunity with the ability to reach so many people and talk about this stuff. And the fact is we have listeners in Iran, which is bizarre to me, but awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Oh yeah. And so we are reaching people who may feel the same way, but would have 5 years ago, 2 years ago, had no idea that there are other people who feel this way out there. And even for someone like me, I've talked about this, my wife and my discovery that swinging is a thing still. You know, we didn't know it was still a thing. We thought it was a thing that happened isolated in the 70s, and people didn't do that anymore. But the discovery that it is still a thing, and a thing that we can do, changed our lives. And I think that's really why we're all here. I'm sure you included, Pepper, is because we want to show other people that they can do this, that it's not scary, that it's not wrong, evil, whatever the oppressive people want to label it. And I'm sorry for speaking for you, Pepper.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is absolutely right on for polyamory communities. There would not be the communities without the internet, actually. Like, polyamory kicked off in, like, 1990, early 90s, you know. What was happening then? Oh, the internet.
Right.
Right. And there was a reason. You know, one of the earliest mentions that people can find was the alt.polyamory Usenet list. And that was a huge deal. And, you know, it had all kinds of problems that we look back on it. We're like, ah, they're so sex negative, you know, all kinds of strange things going on there. But it was really like this initial starting point of people just getting together and talking about it. I wouldn't have heard about it. I heard about it online. Right. I would have had a lot more trouble finding partners, finding people, finding community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, communication and visibility, I think, is the big thing. And that's one thing that poly people seem to be really good at. Like, we just love to talk about ourselves to classrooms full of people.
Yeah. Dylan and I consider ourselves evangelical swingers, where we are all about spreading the good word. Well, I wonder this, though, is you know, you've been doing this for a good long time. How do you feel about the – because it was something we struggle with a lot, and we've dealt with this on recent shows, and we always deal with this, is the idea of coming out to the world, not just coming out to your selected friends who understand, but being actually open – with your family, with your place of employment, with every aspect of your life being completely unashamed of what you're doing. And it's such a hard thing to do. And I imagine that's true in the polyamory community as well, because it's so unexpected.
Well, it's – yes. And – I mean, I think I would say more so than swingers, poly people tend to really want to come out.
Mm-hmm.
I think because a lot of our stuff is based on queer models of how to run a sexual minority. So there's definitely the urge for it. But, you know, you go to some of these poly meetups and everyone's talking and talking about their friends and all this, right? And, you know, they're being very open. And it seems like they're all out. But then you start talking to them and you're like, and you find out that, like, this person's family doesn't know.
Right.
And, you know,
yeah.
This person's friends don't know and this other person's family doesn't know and nobody's talking to their job. mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, okay, there's a lot of closeting going on, actually. So it's a big deal. I mean, I would say come out if you can.
Right.
But a lot of people can't. Like, a lot of people really will lose their livelihood, which is a sad statement on society. And so they shouldn't. And so right. We tell people in the poly community, you know, folks who are in college, we say, well, are your parents paying for college? And they're like, yeah, my conservative Christian parents are paying for college. And then we say to them, don't come out until you graduate. Like, really, just mm-hmm. don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, we know it feels like you're lying. We know you hate it. Wait. We've seen this go bad a lot. So, you know, it's great when people can come out. And one thing I would love to see coming out of the swinger community is, you know, the folks who are in a privileged position who can come out. And that's probably not a lot of y'all. It's certainly not a lot in the poly community. You know, get out there and talk. Like, talk to sexuality classes, to, you know, put up blogs, right? Talk to people just in your friend network and stuff like that. Because coming out is very, very good as a political tool. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of the polyamory still small compared to swinging. Like, I think there are less poly people, but it's been gaining a lot of mind share and getting a lot of good press because people are willing to, like, put their faces in the newspaper.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I am one of those people. I'm in a privileged position. I work for a software company. They don't really care, you know, and so my name is just plastered all over the internet with all kinds of pervy stuff. and I mean, it's a great feeling. Like, I'm just myself everywhere I go.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can represent wherever I am and whatever situation I'm in. And that's wonderful. But I understand that there's not a lot of people who are like me.
Right.
Who are lucky in that way.
Well, that's something I consistently come up against is because my friends all know. We felt very early on that there was no way we could keep such a huge chunk of our life secret without appearing like we're hiding something. You know, and in which case they usually will assume that we're having an affair, you know, that there's some infidelity going on. That's what we're hiding. But so my friends know, my office knows, and I work in a very strange office, so it's fine. But they all know. And actually, we had a discussion about Desire the other day with a girl who didn't know until when she asked where I went in Mexico. I told her Desire, and she got that, wait a minute, isn't that one of those? Oh. And then she asked all sorts of questions, like, so if I just came up on you, like, hey, man, you want to fuck? Do we do it? And it's like, would you do it just like that? Because that's kind of odd, you know. But so they know. But besides my younger sibling, my family doesn't know. And when I told her, she asked me not to share any more about it, and was very happy for me, but did not want to hear any more information about my wife and my sex life. Yeah, which, you know, it's a sister, so I can understand that.
Yeah. Sure.
But I'm constantly, I have this thing whenever my father leaves a message for me saying, I just want to talk to you, call me back. I have this little thing in the back of my head that's sure it's about he found life on the swing set.
Dads always have a way of talking to each other and talking to their kids.
He has never had a serious thing he needed to talk to me about when I call him back. But I'm consistently terrified of the day I'm going to have that discussion that it won't be, hey, Dad, I want to tell you something.
Yeah.
You know, because no one wants to be outed. But we also often don't want to take the step to out ourselves. So I think we're all living in this weird purgatory of space between when we might eventually out ourselves, because I think we all might eventually tell, and when someone might discover something that leads them to something else that makes them ask the question that you have to decide whether or not you're going to answer honestly. You know, and that's a strange place to be with people you really care about. And that's why with friends, I decided immediately that if anyone ever asked me, are you a swinger? I would answer that question honestly. And if my parents ever asked me, are you a swinger? I'd say, yeah, sure, I'm a swinger. Yeah, okay. Because I answer the question honestly, just in a misleading tone. But it's a really difficult thing, and I know we all struggle with it, so I know I don't have to tell you all that it's a really difficult thing.
Right.
But one day, I hope to be able to tell my family and not be worried about what they'll say. You know, and I don't even know what I'm worried about them saying.
Right. Well, that's when I think about those things, I think about the passage of time and how just thinking about that evolution and how my understanding and my relationship with Prof has changed and evolved over time. And that time, things have become at least there's more exposure in the mainstream, just in the sense of people are talking about it. Now, not everything is positive. There's a lot of negative, but there's certainly more of a spotlight on questioning the functionality of monogamy for every single person, mm-hmm. at least in the United States. And I guess this kind of leads me to turn to Pepper and have you, Pepper, lean on your history in the movement, the poly movement or the open movement or however, in every movement you've been a part of, the sex positive movement, and reflecting upon the change that you've seen over time. But I'm more interested in where you see things going in the next 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, and how your experience, your past experience, informs that opinion of what you think the future holds.
Well, my experience is actually in the queer and poly movements, I would say.
Okay.
But in many ways, I feel like we're sort of moving into a somewhat untracked future, which is to say monogamy is on the table in a way that it hasn't been in a long time. People really seem to be, like mainstream news outlets and stuff like that, seem to be much more willing to put things up that are like, oh, you know, open relationships, trying things out, right? You know, there's a lot of interest from like documentaries and talk shows and stuff like that, that you just didn't find even like 20 years ago or 10 years ago. And certainly we've seen this in the poly community. Like, we're getting a lot more interest from people. Much as I hate to say it, because I'm actually not really a fan of traditional polygamy, due to it being sort of sexist. But the, you know, Big Love and Sister Wives on TV kind of cracked the media barrier a bit. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, a lot of producers are looking for, oh, well, what's the next big thing? And like going out and looking for other sorts of non-monogamy to put on reality shows and stuff like that. And I think a lot of this has to do with our cultural space. We're really in a place where, you know, love relationships are the most important thing. Like, even just 40 years ago, relationships were all like, you know, marry the person who's making the most money and like relatively rigid gender roles and all that. And a lot of that's breaking down due to feminism, I would say. And so we're in a position where people can, number one, people are focusing on relationships that really work for them. Like, people want relationships that actually work, that are sexy, where they're sexually fulfilled, where they are getting what they want. And also, these relationships are much more a meeting of equals than they used to be. And you put those two things together, and monogamy, which was originally created to, you know, well, it's been around for a while. It's hard to say what it was created for. But for many hundreds of years, monogamy operated basically as a control on women's sexuality, right? Like, men could go to prostitutes. Mm-hmm. Women were really not supposed to do anything. And of course they did, but they weren't supposed to. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, that's gone. Like, we've lost that power dynamic. And so well, I would like to think we have. in cooler areas, we have lost that. And so there's a lot of space for non-monogamy. So I think what's going to happen is you're going to see movements grow. I think swinging is going to continue growing. I suspect it has been growing since the 80s. Polyamory has definitely been getting bigger, like we can tell the organizers. And that's partly because it started really small. You know, it only started 20 years ago, and even 10 years ago it was pretty tiny. So we've been seeing things grow. And I think what's going to happen is we're going to see polyamory grow, but polyamory is like a... I'm trying to find a good way to describe it. It's a fairly out there type of non-monogamy. And I think things that will be a little bit more accessible are swinging, sex parties, and open relationships. And so we can expect those to grow as well and perhaps grow more. Or perhaps under the rubric of polyamory. Like, there are a lot of people who are basically doing what open relationships used to be, but they're calling themselves poly, right? And so I think moving forward, things are going to be good, actually. I see a lot of growth in just terms of numbers. And I think and at some point it'll totally top out because, you know, most people probably want to be monogamous, and there's a certain amount of, you know, there will always be, I think, a large conservative chunk of the population who just aren't okay with it. But we might top out at like 10% of the population or something like that, 15, 20. And at those numbers, that's just, you know, that's a voting block.
Yeah.
Which is something we never had, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's real potential for change. And I think hopefully what we'll see in the mainstream culture is that things like swinging and sex parties and non-monogamy of various varieties become real options. Like things, right? One thing that was very interesting happened in the queer movement, like maybe about 20 years ago, which is that it got enough visibility that kids in high school started having to ask themselves, am I straight? Right before that, just everyone had been straight. But through the 90s, kids were having to ask themselves, oh, wait, there's these other sexualities. Am I one of those? And it was actually a real question. Like, there were real options on the table.
Yeah.
And definitely the polyactivists, that's what we're going for. Which, kids in high school, people in college, asking themselves, wow, is monogamy what I want?
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are going to say yes, and that's great. But having to ask the question is where the growth is really going to happen. And that's it.
Awesome.
That's what I got.
So that's the teens right there. The 20 teens is going to happen. I agree. I'm with you.
Well, no, I mean, I would like to see it happen soon, but there are large sections of this country where you can go and ask people, oh, you know, blah, 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 polyamory or blah, 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 swinging. And they'll be like, swinging? Isn't that that thing we did in the 70s? Polyamory? What the hell are you talking about?
Right.
Well, yeah, so. Polyamory, unfortunately, you guys don't have the name brand recognition that we have in the swinging community.
Let me tell you, it's nice not having the name
brand. Yeah, we have all the baggage that comes with that,
right,
recognition.
50 years of craziness in the media.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, if nothing else, I don't see things getting worse in the near or even in the midterm. I think that, you know, we all have seen things get better for at least steadily get better for the last few years or so, if not longer. And, you know, any sort of crackdown or, you know, cultural wide shift to making things get worse, I think would actually cause quite a bit of
uproar,
outrage and outreach.
Yeah.
And maybe the thing that catalyzes a larger movement, if that would happen. I'm not hoping for that at all, but I'm just saying that I think things have gone well enough and people have gotten happy enough with where it is there. If it got worse, it would actually cause some real upheaval.
Right. Well, I mean, I think people are really trying to, well, I can't speak for swinging, but I definitely see this in the poly community and the gay men's community. People really build these things that are hard to break down.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like there's no club you can bust and shut down polyamory in San Francisco. Right? You would have to like criminalize adultery and confine people to their houses and go on witch hunts.
Yeah,
you know, it's hard.
No, right? I think the swinging community is right there, because when it comes right down to it, we want to fuck other people, so you can't take that away from us.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, in the face of extreme cultural negativity, I think some people would buckle under, definitely. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people who are just like, no, I have to do this. And maybe that's what's changed. I've been hearing a lot of that.
And interestingly, I was thinking about this when Marilyn and I were watching Pleasantville recently. You know, and Pleasantville is a wonderful allegory for race relations, but it's also about not being able to stop something that's inside you. And when you turn colors, it's because you've achieved what's really inside you. And I saw that as a really great allegory for non-monogamy and opening yourself up sexually. And I mean, it's obviously not the intention of the film, but it's really interesting how that portrays trying to stop, you know, and everyone will stand back and say, well, maybe I don't need to have sex with other people. Maybe I don't need to go outside my relationship. But then there's going to be the rest of the community who's like, well, maybe you don't need to, but I do, and I'm going to stand up for that fact. Killed the conversation. Excellent. Bring up Pleasantville at the end of a long night. Check.
Later.
I'm like searching the depths of my brain to try to remember the tiniest shred of that movie. And I had nothing. Sorry, Coop.
You should rewatch it. It is exactly about open sexuality. Yeah. Trust me.
All right, I do.
I know you do. And if you out there want to watch Pleasantville with me, I will watch it anytime you want. Or you can like us at facebook.com/theswingset. Actually, that's not an either or. You can do both. You can follow us all on Twitter, Swingset Life, Ginger and the Prof, Shira B. Katz, Dylan _Swingset, Tonya _Swingset, Marilyn Beckett, and I forgot Gavin Katz. Poor Gavin Katz really gets the shaft around here. But he's got his own show now, and he's doing excellent on it. So
he doesn't get the shaft. He has the
shaft. He has the shaft. Yes. So,
oh, no.
So even without Shira here, we are going to talk about Gavin Katz's massive cock.
Yeah.
So. and you can... You can find Pepper at Freaksexual on Twitter. You can email us at contact@lifeontheswingset.com. You can give us a call at 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. Pepper, thank you so much for joining us for these two episodes. It's been a great conversation that I hope we will continue to have.
Thanks. Absolutely. It's been totally great being on here.
And if you ever need us to come out there and drop some swing learning on people, you let us know. We'd be happy.
It will happen. Excellent. There's this conference, you see.
Yeah, that conference. Yes, that we're definitely interested in coming out and dropping some swing learning on people. I really have to come up with other things to say.
Hey, just remember, we can learn something too. I definitely got much of an edumacation. As long as we're dropping swing learning on people.
Nope. I wanted to give you the silent treatment too. So thank you.
Oh.
Thank you, Dylan and Ginger. And thank you, poor Shira, who couldn't be back with us for this episode. And now before we get wrapped up for tonight, Pepper, I'd like you to plug your various projects because you do a lot.
Well, you can find my writings at freaksexual.com. If you are interested in some San Francisco events, check out lovetrianglesf.com, the dance party, and check out polyspeeddating.com. And also, next June, I'm going to hold a conference. It's going to have lots of different types of non-monogamy at it. And that is open-sf.com.
And thank you all listeners for swinging by.
You're listening to a Swingset podcast. Hear more at lifeontheswingset.com.